Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Hi, I'm Paul Listick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain. Good day, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Curtain, my podcast for WGN Plus. And this is Paul Listick, and ordinarily it's maybe all theater, maybe all politics, a mixture today, as we talk about a book that's focused on politics, but it's so much fun, you'll feel like you're on an entertainment podcast. This new book is called The Real News, The Never-Before-Told Stories of Donald Trump and Fake News. Its author, John Bernard Duane, is a master of social media, the power of social media, and it all kind of comes together in this book, which, when you first start reading it, you think it's real, and then you're not just so sure what is real. John, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Paul, and thank you for having me on.
So I had read about the book, and then I kind of let it sit for a while before I decided to actually pick it up and read it. And then I read it, and it's a very fast read because it's really entertaining. And I'll be honest, when I started reading it, and you read that first chapter of it, you start to think this book is real. So talk to me about the impetus of creating this book and whether you like the idea of creating confusion for a little bit in your reader that we're not quite sure whether we're reading fact or fiction.
Well, you know, I have kind of a dual training. One is I was a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times for 10 years, and obviously in the news business, my hero back then was Mike Royko, who, you know, I view as maybe the greatest satirist of this city and maybe the country.
Many would agree with you.
Yeah. And then while I was there, I ended up doing an interview with an actress at Second City, told her about how I had written satire in college, and she talked me into going to the Second City, and I went there, got into workshops. So I was actually trained at the Second City for 2 years in the 80s with people you might know there, like Stephen Colbert and Carell. And
never heard of those guys.
All those people. So when we were at Second City
masters.
Back at that time, mm-hmm. you were trained to try to stay real, not try to be funny, stay real. And then what you do is you introduce the irony after that, and that's what you read in the book. You would read a setup, a real setup, and then you would see the twist come in. And the story you're talking about right there, with the which actually was a late addition because it happened obviously on Valentine's Day with the Parkland shooting and the March for Our Lives.
Sure.
You know, I introduce that, and then I take it to how the Democratic Secret Six, including Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, try to come up with a way to get Donald Trump's support on gun control, which is a tough challenge, right? So, actually, as you know, the answer walks in the door on them, and that's when all the comedy ensues at that point. But what I think is interesting about that, Paul, is when I wrote that, I really think that idea could work. And then I had a couple of reviewers basically say the same thing. That one guy, Ed Sarn at Windy City Reviews, said that he thought that Trump will send all his people out to buy up all the books because they don't want him to see the idea.
The book has garnered great reviews, although, of course, since there's so much satire, I never knew if I was reading a real review or not. No, I know they were all real. But you know what? And I know in the way you just told that story of that opening chapter, which is called Democrats Discover Donald Trump's Greatest Weakness, I know you kind of kept sort of the secret piece. But if you don't mind giving away just one of these little things to make the point so readers get it, when you sort of say the answer walks in, and this is why I thought it was real, and I'll let you say it, but it's really a 9-year-old child that kind of comes up with the answer here. And the truth is, when you read it and the way you write it and the interaction of the people who are sitting around with the president, it just kind of reads like it could happen.
Well, that's good then, right?
Very much so.
It feels real. And you know, he obviously has the idea because he's just a 9-year-old kid and he's a third grader, and he talks about they're trying to come up with a way to come up with a gun control solution, right, with Trump. And he says that how he deals with it is he's a third grader, and there's this bully on the third grade playground who push kids around, and all you have to do is call him a chicken. And so that's really the key to it.
Yeah, as As the kid sits there with a lollipop and offers Dick Durbin a chance to have a lick of it, and Dick says no, you know, that kind of stuff. So, I mean, you really do smatter it with just some realistic moments that really could have happened, and which is why I think the book is so enjoyable. Let me go broader, then we'll come back to some of the stories. But, you know, it's interesting because what you tap into there, the notion of, you know, well, if you just call the president a chicken, that'll get him. And, of course, I think most people, whether you like the president or not, would say, yeah, that probably actually does work that way. Talk to me about this book is almost offers a PR strategy for people, right? If I'm a Democrat reading this, I'm a Republican reading it, I'm kind of reading going, you know, there are tidbits in here because this is the world in which you live. And so you're writing story, but you're also giving us, I think, suggestions if we're in the world.
Well, that's
a public strategy.
That's actually true. And especially in that case, because, you know, if you look at it from a PR standpoint, you have to look at what can't work, what can't work, what the result will be if you do this or that, right? I mean, in news, you know, we're looking at what the story is, but when you step to the PR side, it's looking at a strategy that might work. So, you're absolutely right about that.
By the way, have you had any, I know the book is recently out, but are you hearing, I'm guessing a lot of politicos would want to read this book. Are you hearing anything from, forget the book reviewers, but political people who read it and just either get a kick out of it or not?
Well, actually, when I was in Washington in December, when it launched, I actually dropped the book off at each of those congressional leaders' offices that day. And, you know, I haven't heard too much from any of those folks yet. I think they have to be careful about what they say or what they tweet. But basically, the reaction that I've gotten from everybody so far who has read it has been extremely positive because it's not a bash book. It's not a pro-Trump book. It's not a pro, you know, bash book. But it's a satire on his crazy conduct, and I think most Americans can agree that, you know, Donald Trump's a little crazy. So that's what I basically focus the satire on. Even the people who a lot of the people are for Trump, as you know from chapter two, I have the story about who are these people who can just back Donald Trump when he, you know, no matter what he says or does, right? And I had the study done by the Mel Brooksian Institute.
Right.
And the nose holders, there's a lot of nose holders right now, people who love what he's doing politically, but just, you know, hold their nose as he says some of these things and acts like a bully and lies and all these other things. So I think there's a lot of Americans right now who are really happy about things like the economy and, you know, maybe what he's doing with the Supreme Court and, you know, various things, but they're really holding their nose watching him conduct himself as president of the United States, as the leader of the world.
And because the president, and you talk about this, I mean, he's given us the phrase fake news. I don't think we had it before him, not in the way we have it now. But there even are other some chapters which aren't Trump-centric. And the one I'm thinking about was the chapter about the award for the most outraged, not outrageous, but most outraged news commentator. I went to that immediately. I wanted to make sure it wasn't me. And we won't have to give away who actually wins it. But even that is kind of fun, because I would imagine if the president were reading this book, he would get a kick out of that.
Oh, yeah, I would think so. See, I wanted to add variety to it. I couldn't do an entire satirical book on just Trump. So I did, you know, fake news. There's two things people talk about, Trump's conduct and fake news. So I did mix in stories about fake news. And, you know, anybody who watches the cable news networks, they see it on a daily basis, how outraged some of these commentators get. So I wrote this story, the TV News Emmy Awards had to come up with a new award for the most outraged commentator to honor this. And, you know, I have the nominees, and I have Michael Kramer, as you know, Michael Richards, who played Kramer on Seinfeld, to the presentation, which seems perfect, right? And then I have the executives in the audience talking about, you know, who can froth the best because they're so upset, frothing from the mouth and that type of thing. And that becomes a real sign of how passionate the commentators are if they're frothing from the mouth, they're so upset.
And, of course, we won't say who wins it, but at the end of it, of course, I guess I will give this away a little bit, but the winner ends up on the box of Cheerios.
That's right.
And what's kind of fun about that is you then have a Trump moment where Trump actually argues he should be on the box of Cheerios. And that's what I mean by saying, of course, at that point in the book, we know we're not reading, you know, we're reading some fiction here. But at the same time, what you dab into, and I think, and I'm going to make this a more general political strategy, as this city, of course, has mayoral contests, and we went through a gubernatorial contest and all that. It's almost as though you can create an image about somebody, but there has to be the grain of truth.
Yeah, especially in satire. And again, that's something that was was preached to us at Second City is stay in the moment, stay real, and then the comedy will come out of that. When you're a writer, you know, and you're writing it straight, you it's the same process basically, but you feel it as you're writing it, and then it comes out. That's a lot of people have asked me, Paul, how I come up with this stuff, and that's what I tell them. I just start writing it, and then it just comes.
And well, and it can't come to you unless you are on top of news stories. So I'm curious, maybe you still do it. Maybe you were just doing it when you were getting ready for the book. But I imagine every day was a process of, you know, carefully reading newspapers, watching TV news and all that, and looking for those moments, those gems that you could rely on to propel you into a story.
Well, you know, As I said, I was a writer at the Sun-Times for 10 years. I continued to write for, like, the Tribune, Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and I'm a news person. So, yeah, I follow the news closely. In the process of writing the book, obviously, I knew of all of these different subjects and stories that I wrote about. But, yeah, I had to go back and make sure I did the research to make sure that I was dead right on everything that I was writing about. Even though it's fiction, when you do present some of the factual information, it needs to be right. One thing that that I did do that you might be interested in is I honored four of the fellows that I used to write with at the Sun-Times. And I don't know if you caught those names in the story about when Donald Trump actually shoots somebody on Fifth Avenue.
Yeah, which, right, I did read that.
Become another story, which is now very a story they're talking about now. So
so folks like Rich Kogan, who you modify their names a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Richard Coogan, right. Zay Smithers, those were the two. And Albert Dickens is in there, and Phil Velasquez. So those
now, I have to ask you, having just written a book myself called Assume Guilt, where I use people's real names, like Larry Potash, did you change those names just because it was part of your humor, or did you change it? See, my publisher said, I hope you have permission of these people you're using because, you know, you could have legal problems with them. And I said, they'll get over it. And so, you know, of course, when I said that to Larry, we did a segment on air about the book, and he goes, I can sue you? So I'm just curious, were you doing that from a legal perspective or just to have fun?
Well, two things. One is, you know, the book is satire, so when I use the real names of, you know, people like Donald Trump and all those people, it's fiction, so people need to understand that. But when I'm writing about somebody real, like those people I told you about, those are fictionalized characters. I'm just trying to honor them, you know, by using a name that's somewhat similar to them and,
right,
and backgrounds that are somewhat similar to theirs.
But, you also you have a chapter that involves Obama for folks, and this is if you're reading the book and you don't know whether it's real or not yet. To be honest, when you get to chapter 3, which is Obama takes a flying leaf off the Brooklyn Bridge, you kind of go, I think I now know this is satire.
Right.
but even there, it's great fun because you sort of walk through before we ever get to Obama. You know, Kelly O'Conway. I mean, who all these people that it could be taking flight. But talk about that chapter a little bit because I think that was fun.
Well, and again, now there's a good example, right? Obama takes a flying leap off the Brooklyn Bridge again, so that would be a satirical story on somebody on the left, right? But as it turns out,
there's so many chapters we can give a few of them
news away. Media covering that event, which turns out not quite to be that event, and I don't want to give away the ending, but it's really focused on the news media's coverage of that event, not really so much about Barack Obama, but yeah. I was actually very happy with that story because as I was writing it, I wasn't sure how it was going to go. And then as you saw from the end of it, I think that was the right way to go.
So in general, when I think of all the ways people, you know, people on TV, people on radio, as they're making their ads, and there's just so much media going on throughout the course of this book. What is your advice? I'll bring you into the real world for a moment. But after we read this book, what's the best way to get your message out if you are a politician? You know, I don't necessarily mean from radio reaches more people, but I mean in terms of trying to create something in somebody's mind. Is it how it's written? Is it the message itself? Is it the medium that it comes out? What's the key?
Well, I can tell you it's so much more difficult today than it was 20 years ago because there's so many more communication platforms. And first, you have to determine what your messaging is going to be, what your brand is going to be, put a big circle around that. Then you have to determine what your outreach is going to be after that. And then it has to be consistent. It has to be consistent outreach because people are inundated with news and information every day that, you know, in a few days, you're out of their minds. So you know, so when you see, like, you know, politicians running for office and you see those ads on all the time, if you're watching TV and you see them all the time, you're saying, oh, my God, this is annoying. But somebody may not see that who doesn't watch TV so much. They may see it just, like, once or twice. So that's one way. And then another way is through social media outreach. And another way is through, you know, people like the Talk to You, Paul, on TV or on radio. And then after that is billboards. There's so many different communications platforms. But the big thing today, though, Paul, is setting up your brand, who you are, what you stand for, and then choosing your communications platforms and making a consistent outreach.
And, of course, when you said billboard, my mind immediately went to the chapter about Oprah Winfrey. Because you finally answer for us in your book whether or not Oprah will run for president, right?
Yeah. Well, yes, and actually, I don't know if you picked up on who was doing the interview with her, but it's actually again, honoring a reporter that I worked with who actually did kind of make Oprah, and I won't say his name. People know who he is. But he did kind of make Oprah, and then he has a very frank discussion with her. And I really do believe, Paul, if that discussion and interview did take place, that's really how it would go, because those are the things that Oprah Winfrey would have to face if she ran for president, because, as you know, anybody who runs for president, they come after you with everything they can. They'll find every tidbit of information, and they'll attack you. So, as you saw from that chapter, it takes you through the interview, through her decision, and at one point there, as you know, when he's asking her about running for president, she said, you know, I really need a sign from God. And then somebody walks into, I think her assistant walks in and says, we just got a call. There's 10,000 women on the Brooklyn Bridge holding up a sign saying, please run.
Right, yeah.
And then the interviewer says, is that the sign? He says, no, I really need some thunder and lightning attached
exactly.
to it.
She needs the glitz and glamour. And again, in another chapter that kind of steps outside of the Trump world, because I just want people to know, as you said, it's not a Trump bashing book by any means. In fact, not every chapter is about him. But towards the end of the book, you have a chapter about Matt Lauer.
Yes.
And what took you, I mean, again, as you're writing a book, what led you to say, and I think we'll have some Today Show stuff going on here.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that was kind of built on, you know, it's built on a ratings battle. If people watch, that's been going on forever, the ratings battle and how competitive it can be. And then, you know, interns working for the media and, you know, maybe how they're used a little bit and, you know, lose their faith. But, then when the story about Matt Lauer broke, that kind of took me there with what he did and how he did it, and he kind of plays his part in the story there. But really it was kind of about one thing, but then when Matt Lauer happened, it went in a different direction as well. And also, you know, as you know, I'm not shy about stating about these men who have sexually abused women and harassed women and things like that, you know.
Right.
And you saw that in the fight between Bill O'Reilly and Keith Olbermann in that one chapter.
That's right. Let me ask you about a current. It's triggered in my head just because of these things we're talking about. But in the mayoral race, in the runoff race, there was a time on a debate on NBC local WMAQ that Carol Marine, the moderator, basically says, say something nice about your opponent, Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle. And Lori Lightfoot said, you know, Tony Preckwinkle brought health care to poor people. That's great stuff. And Tony Preckwinkle's answer was, well, I really respect Lori for being essentially openly gay and being proud of who she is. And we need respect in our society for that and for diversity and for acceptance. Didn't think anything more of it. But as you know, the next day or two following that moment come all the attacks saying, aha, Tony Preckwinkle was blowing a dog whistle and trying to send all of the religious folks in Chicago a message that, you know, in case they were homophobic or something, let's just remind them that we have an openly gay candidate here. One of the things I know you write about is concern for you is adjusting messages and how to change things. I'm curious to know what your reaction to that. I know we have a little perspective on it now, but when your reaction to that was, either if you watched it happen, it struck me as Tony just being open and honest. I was a little surprised the next day when I saw, aha, it's this strategic effort she's making. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I know Tony Preckwinkle a little bit, and I think she's a really great lady. I don't think she would do something like that, quite frankly. Secondly, if people don't know that Lori Lightfoot is openly gay, they haven't been paying attention at all. So I think that's just kind of some of the people looking for any type of a sensationalistic side of that story to attack. I think we have right now, I think we have a historical moment in Chicago with two black ladies running for mayor, and one is openly gay. I mean, I don't know about you, Paul, but I immediately thought of the Harold Washington win when I saw Lori Lightfoot, you know, make it to the top two that night. So, but, you know, to answer your question, yeah, I never thought that Tony Preckwinkle in that moment was trying to raise that issue. But,
so let me make you a political strategist now as we just follow up on that moment. So it happens, and let's just give it credit that it was meant to be sincere. Now, you're on the Lightfoot campaign the next day. Do you, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is it somebody who sincerely says, you know, I think there was something more going on? Or is it a political strategist who says, I've got an idea, let's turn that around and make it a terrible thing?
Well, then you'd have to ask yourself who is, if you're doing it as a strategy, you have to ask yourself, who is that appealing to, right? Who would that help? I don't know that helps Lori Lightfoot. Her base is still her base, and they felt as strong about her before that statement as they did after that statement. If you're trying to get to the others, then I don't know if promoting that helps them. I think what Lori Lightfoot is doing is promoting how much she knows about the city and her background and how passionate she is about it. I think that's her best strategy, and I believe that's what she's doing right now.
Aside from your background in training at Second City and improv and all of that, and your work as a serious writer, so you really, you know, cover both ends, I'm sort of curious, were you triggered to write a book like this, which is funny and satirical, because of the times we live? I mean, could you have written this book about President Obama? Could you write a book in the future about President whoever that steps in? Or is this a reflection of the very divided times we live in, and that's what propels it?
Well, it's absolutely about the times. When Donald Trump first announced that he was running for president, I thought, like many people, it was a complete joke and he'd be out of it in 3 months, 6 months. But then when he took center stage, you know, obviously it was real. And as we went through this, you know, I think any satirist watching this would be, you know, itching to write about it. It's just it's an amazing time we live in right now, Paul. I mean, the left and right have been divided, but the gap is very wide right now, which is why, you know, in writing this book, I hope you agree that, and certainly many of the critics did, that I'm trying to bring America together for a shared laugh. So if you read the book, you're gonna lose some stress and anxiety about what's going on now, but you're also going to be able to, you know, look at something that's not political and laugh and have a fun read.
I think that's true, and it is indeed a fun read. I could ask you why you came up with the name The Real News, but I think actually, you know something, if you really want to evaluate it, the same way that many would argue the phrase fake news is actually a reference to real news.
Right.
I'm guessing The Real News is because what you're writing about is fake news. Am I giving you too much credit to think that's what you were thinking?
Oh, you're always giving me too much credit, Paul. But yeah, I mean it's a twist on fake news, and it's obviously it's Donald Trump pointing up at the real news, right? Which is humorous in itself. Although some people don't get that, believe it or not, that it's satirical even on the cover there. But like you said, once people look at the different headlines for each of the stories, they know immediately what it's about.
Exactly. Well, the book is called The Real News, The Never-Before-Told Stories of Donald Trump and Fake News. The author is John Bernard Bruin, and the book is published by Post Hill Press. John, people get it. I mean, Amazon, where are the folks you want folks to check out the
book?
Yeah,
you can go to bookstores, but you can also go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble and order it from there. And there's all types of information on Amazon for sure, with several of the critical reviews listed on there, as well as reader reviews. So if you really want to get a sampling for what people who have read it have to say about it, that's the place to go.
Perfect. Again, the book, The Real News, by John Ruane. John, thanks for being with me. Good luck with this. It was
Thanks,
a
Paul.
Good laugh in a much-needed, difficult time we live in. Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.